Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is.
Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we report on some of the most popular travel destinations in the United States. Big cities and small historic towns top the list of most popular places to visit in the United States, according to the travel site TripAdvisor. Millions of TripAdvisor users voted New York, Chicago, and Charleston, South Carolina, as the top three destinations in the United States. Ashley Thompson, Marcia James, and I tell you about 15 of TripAdvisor's top 25 most popular travel destinations in America. Number 1. New York City. More than 50 million people visit New York City every year. The five boroughs, or regions of New York, have some of the most easily recognized attractions in the world. Visitors on a budget can take a free boat from Manhattan to Staten Island for a great view of the Statue of Liberty and the Manhattan skyline.
Number 2. Chicago, Illinois. America's third largest city offers world-class museums, great food, sporting events, and iconic architecture, including Willis Tower, America's tallest building. The Midwest city is also known for comedy. The Second City Theater is where many famous comedians got their start, including Mike Myers and Tina Fey.
Number 3. Charleston, South Carolina. Many say Charleston is one of the most beautiful and historic places in the United States. The coastal city has a very rich history. The Civil War began at its waterfront at Fort Sumter, which visitors can explore. But present-day Charleston has a lot to offer, too. Condé Nast Traveler voted it the number one U.S. city for its beautiful architecture, food, and friendly people.
Number 4. Las Vegas, Nevada. The desert city of Las Vegas is known around the world for its casinos and bright lights. Visitors stay at world-class hotels, eat at top chefs' restaurants, and usually see a spectacular show or concert.
Number 5. Seattle, Washington. Visitors to the West Coast city of Seattle will find the iconic Space Needle, the world's first Starbucks, and Pike Place Market, one of the oldest farmers markets in the country. The Space Needle was built in 1962 for the World's Fair. Riding up to the top provides views of the nearby mountains.
Number 6. San Francisco, California. The most famous San Francisco site is the Golden Gate Bridge. Opened in 1937, it still ranks among the top 10 longest bridge spans in the world. Beyond the bridge, San Francisco has beautiful ocean views and one of the largest Chinatowns in the world. Just a ferry ride away is Alcatraz Island, the former federal prison.
Number 7. Washington, D.C. No city in America packs as many monuments and museums into one area as Washington, D.C. From the Thomas Jefferson Memorial to the World War II Memorial, Washington has enough free attractions to keep you busy for several weeks. In the spring, the cherry blossoms around the tidal basin draw millions of visitors from around the world.
Number 8. New Orleans, Louisiana. New Orleans is home to the annual Mardi Gras celebration, the always busy Bourbon Street, the elegant French Quarter, jazz, and beignets, the signature dessert of the city. After a fun night, you can head to Café du Monde for a cup of coffee and a trio of beignets.
Number 9. Palm Springs, California. Palm Springs is a resort city in the Coachella Valley Desert. Beginning in the 1920s, the city was a popular place for movie stars to escape Hollywood and relax. With an average of 354 days of sunshine per year, visitors can enjoy golfing, hiking, horseback riding, swimming, and tennis.
Number 10. San Diego, California. Few places in America have better weather than San Diego. It's a good thing, too, since there's a lot to explore outdoors in this Southern California city. Try your hand at surfing in the Pacific Ocean on some of America's best beaches, or enjoy the ocean from a distance at Sunset Cliffs Natural Park.
Number 11. St. Louis, Missouri. One of this Midwest city's nicknames is the Gateway to the West. Indeed, St. Louis's Gateway Arch is a monument for westward expansion in the United States. It is the tallest freestanding monument in the nation. Visitors can take an elevator to the top.
Number 12. Sedona, Arizona. Sedona is a relaxed desert community in the U.S. Southwest. Some of the oldest rocks on Earth surround the area, called Red Rock Country. Each morning and every night, the rock formations change colors. Sedona is also famous for its growing arts community and Native American history.
Number 13. Honolulu, Hawaii. The capital city of Hawaii, Honolulu is surrounded by beautiful scenery, including Waikiki Beach and Diamond Head Mountain. Honolulu is also home to the Pearl Harbor Historic Site, the Navy base bombed by Japan during World War II, leading America to enter the war.
Number 14. Miami Beach. Miami Beach offers beautiful white sands, gourmet restaurants, and a very active nightlife. Beyond the beach and bright lights, visitors should check out the surrounding ethnic neighborhoods, such as Little Havana and Little Haiti.
Number 15. Branson, Missouri. Branson is the place to go for country music concerts, comedy shows, and magic shows. Most days, up to 90 performances are taking place at nearly 40 theaters in the city. Set near the Ozark Mountains, the surrounding nature offers great fishing, biking, and hiking.
To learn about more of the top travel destinations in the United States, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. That's all the time we have for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. This week, three more Americans joined the ever-growing Republican Running for President Club. A pediatric neurosurgeon, one of the first women to lead a high-tech company, and a Baptist preacher turned governor all announced their campaigns for the Republican Party's nomination for president. They join United States Senators Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, and Marco Rubio, who have all announced they want to be the Republican nominee for president in 2016. Dr. Ben Carson rose from poverty to be the head of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Children's Center in Baltimore. His mother raised him by herself in Detroit, Michigan. Now, the retired surgeon is the first African American to enter the 2016 presidential race. He is a social conservative with no previous political experience. In his announcement speech, Dr. Carson said he wants to reduce the power of the central government. He is known for making controversial statements. He has denounced President Obama's health care law, also known as Obamacare. He compared it to slavery, and in a recent interview, he said homosexuality is voluntary. Also this week, Carly Fiorina became the first Republican woman to enter the 2016 race. She once headed the computer company Hewlett-Packard. She says her knowledge about the business world makes her different than the rest of the candidates. She has been very critical of the other woman running for president, Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton. Ms. Fiorina questions some of Ms. Clinton's actions while she was U.S. Secretary of State. Mike Huckabee announced on Tuesday that he is running for president again. Mr. Huckabee is both a Baptist preacher and a former governor of the state of Arkansas. When he first ran in 2008, he won the Iowa caucus. Mr. Huckabee brings to the race a social conservative view that is popular with evangelical Christians. He opposes abortion and gay marriage. Although he won eight state primaries in 2008, Mr. Huckabee eventually ran out of money. At the time, analysts said he had trouble reaching beyond social conservatives in the Republican Party. They now say that Mr. Huckabee and the other Republican candidates will talk about national security and foreign policy issues. Ford O'Connell is a Republican strategist.
I think when all said and done and we get to the general election in 2016, you're going to have three issues: economic mobility, jobs, and national security. And while they do overlap, the ability for Republicans to distinguish themselves within the Republican primary on national security is going to be very, very important.
Early public opinion studies show two Republicans who have not officially entered the race have strong support. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush is leading in the early polls. He is the son and brother of two former U.S. presidents. Behind Mr. Bush in the polls is Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. He is popular with Republicans for opposing labor unions. And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz.
Now, the special English program, American Stories. Our story today is called The Purloined Letter. It was written by Edgar Allan Poe. Poe is generally known for his horror stories. This is the third of three stories he wrote about Auguste Dupin and how he solves crimes. The story is about a stolen letter. It first appeared in 1844 in a yearly magazine. It was reprinted in many publications, newspapers, and books. This is one of Poe's stories that influenced the development of the modern detective story. Here is Shep O'Neill with The Purloined Letter.
One evening in Paris, during the autumn of 1845, I went to visit a friend, Auguste Dupin. We were smoking our pipes and talking when the door of his apartment opened. Mr. Germain, the head of the Paris police force, came into the room. "I came to ask your advice," Germain said to my friend Dupin. "I'm trying to solve a very important case. It is also a very simple case, so I really need your help. But I thought you would like to hear about it, because it is so strange. My men and I have worked on this case for 3 months, Germain said. It is a very simple case of robbery, but we still cannot solve it. Dupin took the pipe out of his mouth. "Perhaps the mystery is too simple," he said. Germain began to laugh. "Too simple," he said. "Who ever heard of such a thing?" I looked at Germain. "Why don't you tell us the problem?" I said. Germain stopped laughing and sat down. "All right," he said. "But you must never tell anyone I told you this. The wife of a very important person needs help. I cannot tell you her name, because her husband is a powerful man in the French government. Let us just call her Madame X. 3 months ago, someone stole a letter from Madame X. She is offering a large amount of money to anyone who can return the letter to her. We know that her husband's political enemy, Mr. Darcy, stole the letter. We also know it is somewhere in his apartment. Darcy plans to use the letter to embarrass Madame X's husband and destroy his political power. As you know, I have keys which can open any lock in Paris. For the last 3 months, my men and I have spent every evening looking for the letter in his apartment, but we cannot find it." Dupin stopped smoking. "Tell me how you looked for it," he said. Germain moved forward in his chair. "We took our time," he said. "First, we examined the furniture in every room. We opened all the drawers. We looked under the rugs. We searched behind all the paintings on the walls. We opened every book. We removed the boards of the floor. We even took the tops off the tables to see if he had hidden the letter in the table legs. But we cannot find it. What do you advise me to do?" Dupin puffed on his pipe. "What does the letter look like?" he asked. "It is in a white envelope with a red stamp," Germain said. "The address is written in large black letters." Dupin puffed on his pipe again. "I advise you to go back and search the apartment again," he said. About 1 month later, Germain came back to see us. "I followed your advice," he said, "but I still have not found the letter." Dupin smiled. "I knew you would not find it," he said. Germain became very red in the face. "Then why did you make me search the apartment again?" he shouted. "My dear Germain," Dupin said, "let me tell you a little story. Do you remember the famous Dr. Louis Abernathy?"
"No," Germain shouted. "Get to the point, Dupin."
Of course," Dupin said. "Once a rich old man met Abernathy at a party. The old man was not feeling very well. He decided he would get a medical opinion from the doctor without paying for it. So he described his problems to Abernathy. 'Now, doctor,' the old man said, 'suppose you had a patient like that. What would you tell him to take?' 'Oh, that is quite simple,' said Abernathy. 'I would tell him to take my advice.'" Germain looked embarrassed.
"Look here, Dupin, I'm perfectly willing to pay for advice."
Dupin smiled at Germain. "How much money did you say the reward was?" he asked. Germain sighed.
"I do not want to tell you the exact amount, but I would give 50,000 francs to the person who helps me find that letter."
"In that case," Dupin said, "take out your checkbook and write me a check for 50,000 francs. When you have signed the check, I will give you the letter." Germain looked at Dupin with his mouth open. His eyes seemed to jump out of his head. Then he took out his checkbook and pen and wrote a check for 50,000 francs. He gave it to Dupin. My friend examined the check carefully and put it in his pocket. Then he unlocked a drawer of his desk, took out the letter, and gave it to Germain. The policeman's hands shook as he opened the letter. He read it quickly. Then he put it in his pocket and ran out of the room without saying a word. "Dupin," I said, as I turned to my friend, "how did you solve the mystery?"
"It was simple, my friend," he said. "Germain and his policeman could not find the letter because they did not try to understand the mind of the man who stole it. Instead, they looked for the letter where they would have hidden it. Mr. Darcy is not a policeman. He is, however, very intelligent. He knew the police would search his apartment. He also knew how police think, so he did not hide the letter where he knew they would look for it. Do you remember how Germain laughed when I said the mystery was difficult for him to solve because it was so simple?"
Dupin filled his pipe with tobacco and lit it.
"Well, the more I thought about it, the more I realized the police could not find the letter, because Darcy had not hidden it at all. So I went to visit Darcy in his apartment. I took a pair of dark green eyeglasses with me. I explained to him that I was having trouble with my eyes and needed to wear the dark glasses at all times. He believed me. The glasses permitted me to look around the apartment while I seemed only to be talking to him. I paid special attention to a large desk where there were a lot of papers and books. However, I saw nothing suspicious there. After a few minutes, however, I noticed a small shelf over the fireplace. A few postcards and a letter were lying on the shelf. The letter looked very old and dirty. As soon as I saw this letter, I decided it must be the one I was looking for. It must be, even though it was completely different from the one Germain had described. This letter had a large green stamp on it. The address was written in small letters, in blue ink. I memorized every detail of the letter while I talked to Darcy. Then, when he was not looking, I dropped one of my gloves on the floor under my chair. The next morning I stopped at his apartment to look for my glove. While we were talking, we heard people shouting in the street. Darcy went to the window and looked out. Quickly, I stepped to the shelf and put the letter in my pocket. Then I replaced it with a letter that looked exactly like it, which I had taken with me. I had made it the night before. The trouble in the street was caused by a man who had almost been run over by a horse and carriage. He was not hurt, and soon the crowd of people went away. When it was over, Darcy came away from the window. I said goodbye and left. The man who almost had an accident was one of my servants. I had paid him to create the incident. Dupin stopped talking to light his pipe. I did not understand. "But, Dupin," I said, "why did you go to the trouble of replacing the letter? Why not just take it and leave?" Dupin smiled. "Darcy is a dangerous man," he said, "and he has many loyal servants. If I had taken the letter, I might never have left his apartment alive."
The Purloined Letter was written by Edgar Allan Poe and adapted into Special English by Donna DeSanctis. The storyteller was Shep O'Neill. The producer was Lawan Davis. You can read and listen to other American stories at our website, voaspecialenglish.com. I'm Barbara Klein.